Hi, and welcome to Understory, Western Australia's dedicated weekly environment mini-documentary. This 15th day of August 2018, I'm Elizabeth Poe. As another year of listener sponsorship with Radiothon has been another year of Understory, broadcast on RTRFM for your delight and understanding of issues affecting us all, we keep covering stories that may seem problems but all have solutions within them, and sometimes we can make a difference. Stories like in our Climate 2018 series from experts and others around the country, like First Nations conversations bringing us the ancient linking to our future. We've been sailing around with Peace Boat from Japan and searching the bushland near a home with the Conservation Council, the Urban Bushland Council and the Outback WA Mob. Shepherds yarning, rock art shockers and cement challenges. It's been a great year. Every week we get another learning moment to share in these stories that matter. Now for this week's show, a reprise from last November. And if you haven't already met Rosemary Morrow, you're in for a treat.
Okay, so look, I'm a West Australian at heart. I'm a sand groper. My natural environment really that I love so much is that open woodland of Western Australia and the sand hills behind the beach that you can just flop into on days. But I haven't lived there for a long, long time. Retain affection. Lived in the Kimberleys for a long time. The last droving trips were taking place from Halls Creek to Wyndham. Lived on cattle stations. Understand the life. Thought I'd live there all my life. And instead I did something else.
Rosemary is known affectionately as Ro Morrow. She's an inspiring woman, working in countries where she's asked to teach permaculture, areas which have suffered major breakdowns, disasters like war. Ro Morrow enters those regions like Afghanistan, Bosnia, Cambodia and East Timor, facilitating ways to restore food, identity, landscape and confidence, teaching citizens permaculture's design principles. Here's Ro speaking with Understory reporter Adrian Glamorgan, mostly about shepherding.
So I'm Ro Morrow, presently live in New South Wales. I've been a development worker, mainly using permaculture as a tool since about the 85, 86. I've been a development worker. And I have pledged myself to work in countries suffering war, civil war, or severe civil breakdown, simply because it seems to me that if you work at the base of the pyramid between poverty and wealth and it's able to wipe out the lowest and the worst, then everything else is a bit better. So some people work with smallpox, I work with extreme poverty and with permaculture in war zones or post-war zones.
So in recent times you've become interested in shepherding and shepherds. Why are shepherds important to development?
Well, it's not that they're important to development, so important as they have been to the past. So I was in a refugee camp in Kurdistan recently and the light went on, as it sometimes does, something you've seen in many places right through Lesotho, through parts of Vietnam, even Cambodia, as children take buffalo out to eat, that the world is full of shepherds. And we don't see shepherds. Shepherds are invisible. And I started to think about the actual impact of shepherds on the environment and the shepherd's life. And I realised that in these refugee camps all around them were shepherds, but a lot of these refugees in their immediate past history had been shepherds too. And I started thinking of Armenia and Syria and Kurdistan and Iran, and the shepherds that had walked backwards and forwards through the mountains, and the shepherds that through Africa, and the shepherds in different forms in Asia until their lands are cut off. And I suddenly realised that shepherds are being dispossessed. Now, the value of shepherds is amazing because shepherds hold the key to restituting the country if they're not destroyed. So shepherds know about pasture, shepherds know about nutrient drop of animals, shepherds know the seeds that are held in the feces of animals, shepherds know about the seasons, shepherds know about the grasses and the shrubs, not just shrubs that thing. Shepherds know how to move their stocks right across the world. And I was actually equating this to my experience of going on a last big cattle drove from down near Gordon Down Station to it's now under Aboriginal hands, which is good, to Wyndham, the meatworks. And what the men there, who we called stockmen, what they knew about the country and the lands. Our heritage today in Australia is those stock routes still exist as wildlife corridors. They're regrowing, and they have given us passages for genetic and other movement over time and space of species as we hit climate change. And then going back again to some of the African understanding of what herds and mobs and movement of them did, there's an enormous, enormous knowledge contained in the minds of shepherds. There are still shepherds in Portugal, and I remember seeing them and thinking, it's a shepherd. Countries with no fences made me realise there are still shepherds, but I'd seen them in the background of all my work for years and years and never thought about the shepherds. And listening this morning, someone talking about the difficulty of a Palestinian shepherd getting their flock through a guarded gate into Israel and how their pastures have gone reminded me of in Kurdistan, the capital city, Erbil. They are trying to graze them on the sides of four-lane highways. Now, this is not only a loss of land, it's a loss of knowledge, a loss of culture, a loss of even recovering land. And once the whole shepherding goes out of a country's tradition and we end up with fences, we've lost our responsiveness to climate change. We've lost our knowledge of the movement of species across fences. We've lost our knowledge often of waterways and grasses as they transmit. And so what I'd love to do is go with these Kurdish shepherds from the south of Iraq or Kurdistan, right up the mountains of the north where the snows are for the Tigris-Euphrates melting, and follow them with their conversations of what they're seeing, what they're doing, what they're learning, the use of species, ethnobotany, the fattening of animals, the habits of animals. So what's happening, though, is that as their lands are being taken for housing, as their lands are being taken by tractors, because the tractors eat up the old, small, recognised pastures, their commons are going the way they went in England when they came under fences. But these are coming not under fences, but under tractors, fertiliser, pesticide. And so the whole animal thing and the whole thing about shepherds is lost. It's partly the knowledge, but it's the ecological way they kept the country. And then the shepherds become destructive. So where the shepherds in Africa gave up their cattle and all they represented with the renewal of environment and were forced out and turned to goats, then the goats create the problems. So, you know, you've got this unravelling of knowledge and culture and stability of landscapes that have existed for 1,000 years, simple things like putting highways and bringing tractors in, and then the loss occurs.
Ro Morrow's most famous book is The Earth User's Guide to Permaculture. You might know it. It's a familiar reference to any permaculture student and practitioner. It's been translated into 7 languages, and it's often referenced in communities around the world. Her report, Permaculture in Precarious Places, has delivered important, urgent insights about Afghanistan. For almost 40 years, Ro has worked extensively with locals in Africa, Central and Southeast Asia, and Eastern Europe, and she still teaches in New South Wales. Ro has had a lot of exposure to different types of shepherds and the consequences of shepherding.
Well, many people with Scottish heritage will carry in their family history the memory of the clearances, which were clearances of people in order to bring in sheep and cattle, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, but I think they probably brought in stone fences as well at the same time. The fencing of the land, as an Aboriginal person in Western Australia said to me once, was the big error of agriculture. We couldn't expand in a good season, contract in a poor season. And so that you weren't able to modify and deal gently with your landscape because you just kept putting more sheep or cattle on that bit of land till it's eaten to bits. The Scots story is one of the tragic ones. The Museum of Migration in Melbourne shows some heartbreaking stories of Scottish people leaving the land so the cattle could eat more. Yeah.
Now, I know you're just beginning your exploration of this issue. Can you say anything about what you've learned about age or gender in terms of who is a shepherd or a goat herder or a cattle driver?
Well, when you get the strictest Islamic countries, for example, Afghanistan, which now is the second most rigid Islamic country in the world, the people there are all male around the big cities. However, when you go out into the villages and the Panjshir Valley and areas like that, it's girls and boys. Admittedly, one of the problems of herding is it keeps these children out of school where schools exist. So they grow up ignorant of being able to read and write, which is an enormous handicap, and they feel it. But it should be possible. We started schools for shepherds in 1975 in Lesotho in Africa, called Etutu Kantli Hosokolo, and the kids had to come to a hut each night, and the price of schooling was a candle. And someone who had 4 years of school or more would teach them their phonetic language in Sesotho. So it isn't impossible for children to have schooling today. They could all have iPads, teach each other in 5 minutes and report in every now and again for how they're learning. Because the sheep are so used to not having fences or dogs that they more or less stay around the shepherd. Yeah, so shepherds live in folds, which are often stone or timber buildings, as I saw in Albania, which has probably disappeared now, and move with their sheep and care for their sheep, and sheep are part of their family. But in addition to that, the whole nature of the herding provides a series of products of food, fabric, building, friendship. As I said, the animals are part of the family. And I don't know if I mentioned to you, but in a refugee camp in Kurdistan where they're allowed no animals, I was in a place one day visiting and I heard a goat go baa. So the animal somehow got past the razor wire and they meant so much. And Chief Seattle said, we'll die of a great loneliness of spirit if we don't have the animals and have them close. But for the Kurdistani and a lot of the families in those areas and a lot of the other nations around there, the weaving, the dyes, the fats, the carpets, the clothes. Whole cultures were built around those what we call nomadic people. They built their songs. Today we think of people maybe in Mongolia, but they're still existing today. However, it's a complete erosion of culture from healthy foods right through to homegrown and prepared clothes and songs and memories. And pride in national product, pride in culture, pride in ability to be the best carpet maker or the best weaver or the best maker of yogurt or whatever it is. All those small things are just being snatched from people very badly. So the flow-on effects not only ecologically are cultural and economic and serious.
And I think I saw that in Greece, there was a return to some of those practices because of that sustainability aspect there.
Yeah, well, I've been teaching permaculture in Greece, and I've got a Greek friend, a couple of them, who are starting to take permaculture into refugee camps. However, with the complete economic collapse, it's made it economically possible, because there is no money, for people go back to the villages of their fathers and forefathers. And certainly in a lot of Europe, they still own that land. As a grandchild, you own the fallen down croft of your grandparents. You can go back there and you can add permaculture skills such as solar panels and water collection and soil water and carbon storage and everything with good knowledge today to make those villages at least viable to providing probably something like 80% of your needs, reducing that need to earn income, but using better skills than grindingly poor, you know, arthritic, rheumatism-causing skills that destroy bodies and minds sometimes. So there is a new world in sustainability that people in Portugal, Italy and Greece are picking up on as the economics continues to fail. I guess the thing for us really to take on board about this is how connected things are. And how connected destruction is. And we don't always think of what is being destroyed. So if you do pass a picturesque-looking shepherd on the side of the road with 20 sheep, that is probably the beginning of the end of a whole cycle of looking after the land by putting animals through it on a regular basis. And it's happening right across the world. And we who live in countries of fences and dogs and tractors and motorbikes do not understand the implications of this for a whole lot of the world's populations where shepherds are still practicing. And I think we need to sometimes make those links. They are going to become a dispossessed in their own land, or the animals are going to sheds or pastures and then onto corn from America or Brazil or somewhere. So that is going to be the breakdown of that chain of sustainable organic products. And with that goes all the things to do with their skins, not only their food supplies, their milks, but their fabrics, weaving and the rest.
Rosemary Morrow has been our guest on today's Understory, a replay of the final in our uniquely conceived series on Quaker women and shepherds, which you can stream to listen again to and share. Just Google RTRFM Understory blog. With thanks to all those who subscribe and create and help in this wonderful community radio space, from me, Elizabeth Poe, and fellow Understory reporter Adrian Glamorgan. Meanwhile, do your best in maintaining the diverse media space by keeping exploring the RTRFM space. And come back to Understory same time, same planet next week, as there's always more to explore with us on Understory.